all the things and make you sing and tap your little toes. Oh, oh, I want to know.
Hi, everybody. This is Chantel Lopez, and you are listening to the Thinking Pilates podcast. I am here today with a very special guest, Stacy Mulvey. Hi, Stacy.
Hi, Chantel.
Thanks for being on the podcast today.
Yeah, it's my pleasure.
Stacy is a recent graduate of the teacher training at the Pilates Center, and she's studied under Deborah Colway, my co-host, who is not joining us today. And we are talking about Stacy has been gracious enough to agree to come on and let us ask her some questions about her teacher training journey. And the topic's going to revolve or at least orbit around what Deborah and I were talking about in the last show, which is just what's the experience of going through a teacher training program in terms of support that you need or support that you get, the commitment that you need to make in order to get through the program. And then what does that look like? How do we reflect on it? How does the experience, give us insights as we move on past our teacher training into our first, you know, teaching gig and maybe even into opening a business and onward, even, you know, time and years past our teacher training. One of the specific things we were talking about was this idea of breakdowns and breakthroughs and how this can happen on a very kind of micro scale or can be very macro, can be a little bit bigger and more intense. So Stacy, I'm really excited to hear from you and to get some of your perspective about your teacher training program and just what do you think, you know, being kind of newly finished. I'm going to just let you maybe just jump in wherever you'd like. Like, I know you've spent some time reflecting a little bit. What's one of the things that's coming up for you when you look back on your program now?
Something that I realized that now that I've completed my program, and I actually sort of I essentially did two programs at the Pilates Center. They have an advanced teacher training program. So when I started my program, I had no previous Pilates experience, and so I just did the intermediate teacher training program, and then I bridged over to sort of make it the full, complete, advanced program.
Mm-hmm.
And when I started my teacher training program, I just mentioned, I had no previous Pilates experience, which might seem a little bit crazy. Like, how did I end up wanting to teach Pilates? But I honestly looked at, I knew I wanted to explore movement. My background previous to entering the program was in IT, and jobs, I guess you could just boil it down to jobs involving troubleshooting and technology, computers. And although I was competent and had the ability, you know, to do that job, it was never something that where I felt fulfilled.
Mm.
And I came to this, you know, I guess a breaking point in my life where I realized, like, I had a passion, which was mindful movement, whatever that sort of meant to me at the time. And it was something that I knew was a passion for me, but I always kind of told myself that, you know, despite all the cliches that, oh, you should follow your passion, you should do what makes you happy, I was like, well, that's just not possible. Like, that's you know, like the voice of just like, well, that wouldn't work. I couldn't sustain myself, like, economically, that doesn't make sense. So when I arrived at that breaking point, I was like, you know what? What if I just kind of took that challenge that I was giving myself and either prove myself right and say, aha, you know, I tried it and it didn't work. And so all of that, you know, negative negative talk that I was, giving to myself was true, or I could prove myself wrong, and then, wouldn't that be great?
Right.
So, and I looked at Pilates or yoga as two possibilities. I'd taken yoga for a while, but I'd never taken Pilates, but through my research, I decided that Pilates was where I wanted to go, because it offered more education. First of all, there was just more opportunity for education, and to me, it seemed as though Pilates was more of a profession due to the amount of education that you could get and the nature of the types of jobs you could get with Pilates. So I felt like it could take me, whether it was working out of a physical therapy office, in rehabilitation, or just working out of a studio, it just seemed like there were more opportunities there. And so coming from the world that I was in, which was very analytical and linear, Pilates was the choice I made. And I researched different training centers and went with the Pilates Center because of their excellent reputation.
What jumps out to you in terms of this idea of breakdowns, breakthroughs, support, commitment?
Yeah, what comes up looking back is I just had no idea how deep it would go in terms of my personality, in terms of really looking at myself. And I really took for granted how difficult but how rewarding it would be. Like, I really sort of looked at my training as I would just go in, I would just put in the time, I would learn a set of exercises, and then I would go teach them. I really did not expect the transformation that I see in myself when I look back to who I was when I started and to who I am now.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't realize how rewarding that process would be, and that's why it's something I'm really grateful for.
Yeah. And it's what you're saying is so, so familiar to me, because in teaching teachers, I don't know how much Deborah has shared with you about what I do, but it's like, it happens over and over and over again. And a lot of teachers, are coming through our program or from other programs. Well, let me say this. Many teachers begin their teacher training program having little and sometimes no experience. And I don't think that that's the defining piece, because a lot of people also come with years and years of experience specifically to Pilates, but that there is a certain expectation or a lack of, there's a lack of knowing, right, what this process is going to be like and what teaching is going to really require of us. And I kind of love to hear that you say that, because I just think across the board, it's true for everybody. It's an intense process. And even though, I don't know if anybody ever said anything like that to you, but I know that I say it again and again to my teachers coming into their program. It's like, this is going to be more than you think, so let's do some work to help set you up, because it's always more. It was more for me. It was so much more for me, as you're saying, than I ever imagined it would be. It required so much more of me, and it was truly a transformation.
Right. Someone may have told me, but I don't know, even if they had, I don't remember. And it was probably because I wasn't really open to hearing it.
Yeah.
If it was said, because
right.
I was just so, at that point, my perspective was so narrow, I guess, looking back. Like, I just didn't know what I'd gotten myself into. I guess that's neither good or bad. In the end, it's great. And at the time, it was like, that's just who I was. I wasn't open to receiving oh my God, I'll be a different person by the time I'm done.
Right.
Or I was probably like, sure, I'll be different.
Right. I think that's true. I think that's true. So let's dive in a little bit. And what would you say, like, if you could pinpoint a moment, and perhaps, and very likely there are many, but if you could pinpoint a moment, that you might consider a breakdown or a breakthrough, like, what, you know, what was it like? What were some of the challenges like for you?
A moment that I do remember, the Pilates Center, they have a formal lecture series where, they're still done in a live format. Now they're done online. You can also receive them online,
right.
But at the time they were only done live. And so I didn't really, again, I mean, it was something that was, it was information that was given to me, but I just could not grasp like what the actual process would be. In that it was sitting and, you know, a lecture format and diving into the Pilates work, divided up by apparatus, and then just going through in depth over, you know, this is the 100, this is the roll-up, and just breaking it down. And I just remember being so overwhelmed and so feeling so lost. And like, I was like, these are these basic exercises. And I feel like, I'm the only person in the room that doesn't get what's going on. and Deborah, I remember Deborah was, doing that first weekend, and, you know, she's fabulous. She's an amazing teacher. But I just had this feeling that, you know, she clearly has a mastery of the work, and I'm like, I just felt like I was lost. Like I had no, I would never get what she was saying. Like, you know, she was clearly delivering true and valuable information, but I just couldn't grasp it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just this feeling of panic and like, oh my God. I made a terrible mistake.
Oh, no.
You know, like, why would I think I could learn this, you know? And it just felt like almost like they were speaking a different language.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, I remember going home and, breaking down, you know, having this little, you know, I feel like when those breakdowns sort of sneak up on you,
mm-hmm.
like, oh, it's not like you're like, oh, well, I'm going to break down when I get home. You know, it's like, you're sort of like, okay, you know, everything's okay. And then, I don't know, some little trigger, some little thing or frustration kind of comes up and it's like, oh my God, like this is too hard. I can't do this.
Mm-hmm.
And Now what am I going to do? Like, I'm in over my head. I'm never going to understand. I'm never going to see what she's hoping I'll see, what it seems like everyone else can see. Why can't I see that?
Mm-hmm.
And it was a rough night, and just sort of knowing that this was the rest of the weekend. So the lectures start on Friday and then go Saturday and Sunday. I was like, sort of in this panic still, like, you know, can I find a way out of this? Should I make up an excuse? Should I come down with the flu? You know, what am I going to do? But I had to sort of go back to, can I prove myself wrong still? Like, do I still have that? Like, what if I just kept going, gave it my full attention, gave it my focus, and just was open to what I could see, even if it was limited and even if I felt like I was the only person that didn't understand.
Right.
Maybe if I just thought through, something would click at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, I felt like I had committed, you know, time and money and, you know, all my friends knew this was like the big thing I was going to do. I was like, I can't back out now. I really just have to, you know, bite the bullet. And if I fail, then okay, like I proved that negative voice right, and then I, you know, can then life can go on, and I can just go back to working in IT and know that that was that. But at least I tried, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that's what was important, is I just had to try. I had to just try and then know if I was right or wrong.
Yeah. So I think you've kind of answered the question that I was going to pose to you, which is when you're in that moment, what is it, right, that gets us, that gets you or got you to show up again? And I feel like you've answered it, right? It's kind of like the risk assessment all over again. So if we go back to the original kind of foundation of what Deborah and I were talking about, which is, what would you say to somebody starting their training? And again, as we've already said, maybe they could hear it and maybe they can't hear it, but what do we say to that younger self or to that teacher starting out? Because this is not an uncommon experience, you know, like, what the hell did I do? You know, because I think a lot of people are transitioning. They're making big life transitions like you did, you know, from career. So what is it? What do we anchor ourselves into? How do we make that decision? Or what was helpful for you, you know, to get you to show up the next day?
That's kind of what, let's see, let me see if I can answer that, because it's difficult. I mean, and it's probably different for each person, what will get them through. But what I would love to tell any teacher starting out is that there most likely will become a point where they reach that, and that it's to let them know that it is, that they're not alone in that feeling.
Mm-hmm.
That we've all, at some point in time, we've run into that block where, like, this is a huge mistake. What am I doing? I'll never get this. And just to know that we've all been there. Even the best Pilates teacher has been there at some point.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe the feeling that they're actually not alone in that. And that what that vulnerability that they're experiencing is actually part of the process. And really, in my mind, it's something that all the good teachers have.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, as uncomfortable as it is, and it's definitely not comfortable at all, that vulnerability is actually a gift, and it's something that they can sort of lean into it and let it show up and be, you know, and breathe through that and admit, like, I'm feeling so vulnerable right now.
Mm-hmm.
That can actually really serve them and help them as teachers, and will only make them better and will only help them get further through, you know, their journey.
It's perfect. I mean, it's said so beautifully too. I mean, I think that vulnerability does translate, right? So a couple of things come to mind. It's like, as a teacher, you're really not ever, I mean, are you really ever a master? I mean, maybe there's levels of wisdom, right? Or ability to see things more clearly or from a greater vantage point. And yet I, to reflect what you said, feel like the best teachers are always the ones that are willing to be students. And to me, that looks like willing to put themselves in uncomfortable situations where they don't know. And, you know, having been a teacher for so many years now, I feel like that's a place that is still not wholly comfortable, but I actually invite it. You know, I really find myself inviting that vulnerability, because it's so sweet, and it always ends up leading to insight. And, you know, it's not about greater learning. at this point in my teaching career, I'm less interested in more information, and I'm more interested in understanding the information I already have, how to apply it wisely. And I just, to kind of reflect back to you, what you said about vulnerability. So from your vantage point, from your perspective, from the new teacher, you know, like the teacher in training perspective, and then all the way to, you know, the somewhere out in the future perspective, I think that it's such a relevant experience and so valuable, right, that you're talking about.
Yeah, and it's, I guess it's, you know, it's like you and Deborah were sort of talking about, like the breakdown, you know, that is, it's like this, you know, I guess that's just the heart of being vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And like, the, you know, that is the point at which you are the most vulnerable is when you've reached this sort of breakdown. And it's too bad that we sort of beat ourselves up for being vulnerable, mm-hmm. like for whatever, you know, experience or like message that we have that we're like, oh, this, I don't want to be this open. But it's, you know, to kind of reflect back what you're saying, it's so valuable as a teaching moment for yourself as a teacher and just as a human. And it's so valuable to just to kind of go through an experience and understand, like, you know, I can be vulnerable and I can come back. And that's, I guess that's the good news, you know, like there's a breakdown, but you can somehow like keep getting through that, and to learn to be vulnerable again. So,
yeah. And it's a reflection too of what happens for our students over and over again. Right? I mean, they
so
show
true.
Up. Yeah. I mean, they show up and they have no idea. They just have no idea. I mean, it's a very parallel experience, I think, for them. They don't know what they're getting into. They may have been told that it's a bigger deal than they've, you know, might believe, but they don't, you know, whatever, that doesn't mean anything to them. And then they get in there and it's like somebody speaking a different language and wanting them to move their body in a way that they've perhaps never moved it before. And there is a lot of vulnerability involved in that. So I think it's an interesting parallel between us and our students, and what a gift that is, right? For us to be kind of tempered in our own teacher training journey in a way that's really relevant to holding that place for our students when we, you know, when we are done.
So true. Yeah.
Let's change gears just a little bit, because one of the other things Deborah and I were also talking about was commitment. And I wonder if there is anything that sticks out for you in terms of making a commitment to yourself or to your practice, or like what was necessary for you? Can you speak to that at all in terms of what kinds of commitment you really had to make to yourself in order to, you know, kind of get through the process?
I think, you know, I guess I can, since you're asking me that question, I can only make it personal, but for me it was, you know, it was like even getting into the teacher training program was sort of this battle, like this internal battle of like this, you know, negative voice saying you shouldn't even try, it won't work, you'll never succeed, versus this sort of curiosity of like, is that really true? And, you know, just some of the, you know, internal work that I'd done before entering the training program, I've been really concerned with living a life of, living a life to where if I'm on my deathbed, so to just stay really in tune with the fact that I'm a mortal person, mm-hmm. that when that event comes, do I want to look back and regret that I never tried something, or do I want to look back and be glad that I gave it a shot?
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want to see myself as being someone that was full of fear.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a big motivator for me, is when I'm getting to those places of discomfort, is, okay, is this because I'm scared, mm-hmm. you know, and if that's okay, but what am I scared of? And so I guess that, you know, that sort of ties into commitment for me, where, you know, I mean, it's kind of silly, and it kind of tells you, I guess, about some of my neuroses, but, you know, it's like I experience that negative voice of, like, well, you can't, you shouldn't, it'll be scary, it'll be hard. And I want to challenge that voice.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, but I don't know if you're right.
Yeah.
I want to see if you are, because if I listen to you and then it turns out you were wrong, like, what, that will just be so, that will just seem like such a waste that I never, you know, that I never try to challenge that negativity or try to, like, explore whether or not that was true. And so, you know, it's like, you know, it's like a crazy person sort of, like, ending up, like, fighting her own battle to, like, not be crazy by saying, like, well, I'm going to challenge the crazy voice and prove her wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to motivate me to do something sort of scary and hard.
Yeah.
You know, so there's that part, but there's also, you know, it's like I did, you know, there's, you know, economic factors, like, this is an investment, and I think that's probably really good that you're, you know, it's like you're really investing money. That matters.
Right.
And so, you know, it's not something you want to just walk away from or say, like, I'm just going to quit, because it's like, no, I need to make this work. Like, this has to work for me, or I don't know. I don't even want to think about, you know, like, the alternative. So there's that factor. And then, you know, I sort of made this big identity shift where, like, I'm going to change my identity. My identity is going to, it was this, but I wanted to be this other thing. And, you know, sort of the social implications of that, and not wanting to appear as a failure to friends and family, or, you know, especially to myself. But it's like, you know, if I went through all this energy to change my identity and say, I'm going to be a teacher, like, what would that mean if I was just suddenly like, no, I'm just going to actually give up on this now,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, so even those, you know, those are sort of, they're sort of like nets that can kind of catch you, even though they may not seem like the most idealistic, like, motivator. Like, it's like, it's at the same time, it still does sort of drove me to keep reaffirming, like, oh, this is what I said I would do. I need to keep going.
Yeah.
And then in terms of my own body, you know, it was, again, just sort of like, this is this information that I'm getting, and I'm being told that, you know, if this work will have this effect on one's body, and if I'm going to teach that to others, like, I really need to know that that's true.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can't just say that it's true and just hope that they'll believe me, you
right.
know? I mean, I guess that's kind of what you're always doing, but it's like, if I really know, because I can say, like, I actually, you know, did what I'm telling you to do, and I've felt it, like, I'm like, how much better would that, how much more authentic would that be to, you know, a potential student of mine. Mm-hmm. And so that, you know, once I kind of saw that I wasn't doing that and saw like, well, you know, maybe I should just try what I'm learning to teach so I can validate it. Like, how, you know, maybe that would actually help me in this teaching experience. And it honestly did. It changed everything for me.
Yeah.
Once I actually started doing the work.
Yeah. That's interesting. I want to come back to that. Let's see if we can remember to hold that for a minute, but I wanted to just, say something about, these all seem incredibly relevant in terms of the topic of commitment. And I just was thinking that it's like, Deborah and I were talking in the last episode about how one can, kind of set themselves up for any journey, right? Any new endeavor by looking at like where are the places where I might get tripped up, right? Where are the places where I might fall short? What are my habits, my patterns? What's challenging in my life? What do I know about myself? And how can I just put those out there, become aware of them in a very conscious way? And then what am I going to do? What can I do now to proactively support myself, right, in moving through those things? It feels like it's a lot of the same thing. I mean, what you're talking about, just identifying what you're committed to as a person. And, you know, I know we're looking at this in a retrospective sense, but, you know, we all know when we go through any experience, we have these benchmarks, these moments where we get clear about, yeah, my commitment, you know, is this, even if we don't articulate it that way, or, you know, I can support myself in this way. And I think it might just be useful to say that when I hear you talking, it's like there's a personal commitment to, like, it's not, it's, I don't know, here's what's kind of, here's what I want to say is it's a commitment to like fearlessness, right? It's like, it's not necessarily not being afraid, but it's a commitment to moving into the fear anyway, right? It's like, it's a commitment to discernment, right? To knowing yourself, to knowing what's possible. It's very interesting to me because this kind of what I think of how I learned it was the Tibetan meditation on death, right? Like the deathbed, you know, scenario of getting to the end of your life and looking back. And I think that's something that drives me in pretty intensely. And for me, it feels like a commitment to not regret my choices, right? To really see that I'm living my life as fully as possible, which means taking risks and, you know, really looking at is my belief or the story that I have about whatever really true, and can I somehow find that out? And so it's just interesting because I think we all have these things, and how cool would it be if we could take a second at the beginning of any new endeavor and go, okay, what am I really, I'm getting myself into this, and what's going to anchor me, you know, what's going to anchor me into this process? And most of us don't have the foresight, you know, to do that. Mostly, I mean, maybe we do in some ways, but even as we go through, right, and we're having these breakdowns to think about like, yeah, how can I, you know, I'm committed to just, what was something else that you said I was thinking about? I don't know, fearlessness and discernment, authenticity, I think is something when you were talking about this shifting in identity, it's like, yeah, this, I'm committed to being who I am. And what's that really look like? It doesn't maybe look like what I've been in the past, but it means revealing something about myself, you know, something more about myself. So it's just, you know, it is a very, it's an interesting journey, and it goes to what you said in the very beginning of how transformative it was, you know, so much more than you expected, but, and just how it does pull.
Yeah, and it's,
Go ahead.
It's funny how we sort of know that on a certain level, because it's like we know we're taking on, you know, even if you were some sort of, you know, if you were a teacher of any other discipline and deciding you're going to add Pilates, like, you know, on some intellectual level, like, well, I'm sort of altering my identity, or I'm taking on some new identity that I'm adding to. But it's interesting that we do sort of, maybe it's positive that we still manage to stay unaware sometimes, but that means that when you do sort of transform your identity, you know, it's this like big process of the ego, mm-hmm. you know, shedding the old ego and bringing on something new. It's like, it's never really easy, but I don't think we like remember that when yeah. we start this process, or if we did, maybe we'd be like, oh my gosh, what am I doing? I don't want to do that. It's really hard.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's true.
But yeah, when it comes up, it's like you're saying, it's like those touchstones. It's like you know, we kind of do in some ways, like, oh, it gets hard. You know, I need to remember if I invested some money in this, or I told my friends I would, and I don't want to lose face with them. Like, you know, uh-huh. you kind of set yourself up, maybe subconsciously, like knowing, like, I will probably need to come back. Like, I need to kind of set these things up for me, so when it does get hard, I have that commitment level that I can kind of remember, and it'll keep me going.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, so did you find yourself actually going through the program and not really, like being committed to your own practice? Like, what was that? I wanted to just kind of dive into that a little bit more. Because I think, sometimes the physical demands are also very shocking for students going through the teacher training program, which just adds a whole nother level of almost like chaos, right? And intensity that then fuels the emotional, mental piece too. So what was that like for you?
Yeah, it was very, I had, other physical practices prior to entering Pilates. I was a calisthenics teacher and a pole dance instructor, and so I had what I sort of thought was a strong, fit body. And it, you know, of course, I was strong and fit in my ways. And then getting into the teacher training program, I noticed that I had this resistance to the coaching I was getting in, like, my quality of movement or where my strengths, my weaknesses were. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's, of course, like, if you're resisting something, you're resistant, and it's like, it kind of comes back to that vulnerability. Like, well, I'm strong, you know, like, what do you mean? I just have to read. I tried so hard, and now I'm getting feedback that I need to try it differently, you know? And, maybe in that resistance, feeling like, they're just trying to make this hard for me. Was actually like a thought that I really went through my head. Why are they making it so hard?
Yeah.
And, the thing was, though, I did confront the fact that, first of all, that I had that resistance. I wasn't really wanting to go, I wasn't wanting to do the recommended workouts. So, you know, it was like, I don't know, it was like this sort of exhaustion and, you you know, again, just kind of like the resistance tied up into that. Like, well, I'll just learn the exercises and then I can do my own thing kind of thought process. And, you know, I don't remember a specific time where there was maybe a breakdown, but it was this kind of evolving awareness that I think they're really right. Like, I do notice that there, I don't have this quality that I'm as I'm practice teaching, that I'm telling others that I'm starting to kind of see in others, I guess you could say, that I was maybe seeing as a teacher, like, okay, you know, I think about it, I don't really have that myself. Mm-hmm. And so I just sort of, you know, just, it literally was just one day where I was like, well, you know, there's a 30-minute mat, and Joseph Pilates wrote this whole book, and he made all these promises surrounding this. What if I just started to follow that and just see what happened? You know, would anything change for me? Mm-hmm. And you know, it's built into the program, and I came across something that Deborah had told me, had written down in my journal to do, if I wanted to learn the method, I should do advanced mats. And, you know, it was like this light bulb kind of went off, like, you know, there it is. Let me just try this out. I'll just experiment and see what happens. And, you know, it was profound. The change that came over my body and how that change accelerated my confidence in my teaching, and that fear that I had around teaching, it just started to not be as big of a deal, because mm-hmm. I knew it's like I could really speak, I could really be authentic. Like, I know this is true. And I knew that it would come across to my students without, like, a lot of, I felt like I really had to do some convincing, because I would just know it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that I just did know it. And so it was really profound, the shift. And, like, once I started to feel it, it was the that feeling was sort of, you know, it just sort of enforced the commitment. It's almost like I didn't need to be committed anymore. It was just so self-evident that, like, I had become so much stronger. I had become so much, I'd noticed the change in the organization of my body. It was just like, well, this is, you know, like the proof, the proof I was looking for. Like, no one needed to tell me at that point. Like, I had just, like, discovered it for myself. So. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And sometimes that has to happen for us to get through, like, we have to find our own way through the resistance, right? To find the answer that just is like the natural intelligence rather than somebody else telling us that it's true.
Right.
It's very interesting. And I think the resistance for people going through the program is also really, you know, it's really common. It's like, even now I feel when I, you know, do go into a training or I'm having my own movement analyzed in any way, I notice how that comes up, that like, I'm a well educated, intelligent mover. Don't tell me I know my left hamstring doesn't, you know, it's like, but it is just, it's the resist. I don't know. There is just, it's so familiar, that experience of resistance. And what you were saying about, which I thought was kind of funny, like almost like the us against them or me against, you know, you against me kind of thing, like that you were saying, like, you know, when somebody's giving you feedback or having you do something a different way, and then that inner voice saying, well, you know, I'm already strong and I already have, you know, already, you know how to do something. It's like chipping away, right? Chipping away at the, not only the resistance, but I don't know, I hate to bring it back to this again, but like breaking down a little bit. I don't know, just moving through reluctance, resistance, needing to be right, you know, needing to be good, needing to know. And it's like, well, you can't really be open that way, right? You can't really be mentally open. You can't really be physically open when you're stuck in your habits. You're stuck in your physical habits and patterns. You're stuck in your mental, emotional habits and patterns and your stories. It's like, you can't be open to change that way. So it's, I mean, it's a great...
It's interesting as a teacher to experience that too, I think, because it's like, it's so funny, you know, it goes back to that vulnerability, the vulnerability and trust, that like if somebody is giving you feedback as, you know, as a student, even though if you are a teacher, you know, and you're taking a class, it's like you have to sort of be vulnerable and accept that maybe you do have something to learn from that teacher, even if, you know, you end up learning that, you know, you learn it and you just, you can decide, well, I don't want to integrate that, but that's nice, you know, maybe it was like, oh my gosh, like since I was open, I really did learn something valuable that I wouldn't have learned if I'd stayed close to it. And then also as a teacher, I think I recognized that once I did start to teach, it's sort of this frustration that, you know, if I wanted to give all this information, I was so enthusiastic about, you know, this is how you should do this. and then encountering that resistance and feeling like, oh, you know, I guess they're going to resist that. And, you know, it is what it is, but it's like, it's like this feedback loop, I guess, like there's like the vulnerability and then there's resistance we put up.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, lean back into the vulnerability because that's where the growth happens and that's where the strength builds. And then maybe, you know, you need to resist it for a little while just to kind of have, you know, get past the breakdown.
Yeah.
You can break through somehow.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, it makes me also think of, you know, Amy has said this to me before, like this idea of don't make a rule of it, like don't take everything at face value. And, but it's almost like the other side of that, or I don't know, maybe something that's parallel to that. It's like, okay, somebody is offering you something, whether it's feedback or just like blatant information. And don't we always just have the choice to take it at face value and then try to re-articulate it and then get somebody else to take it at face value, which then it's like the information or the whatever it is, it becomes kind of thinner and thinner and thinner. Right. And then we have to kind of fake it more and more and more. And there is, and then that creates a lack of confidence, right. And a lack of being able to be decisive or to even see clearly. Whereas if we're given feedback or information and we can ask ourselves, how can I know this for myself? Let me know this for myself first and then decide whether that's like, I mean, just to what we're talking about, like, let me just know the advanced work. Let me have the experience of doing it regularly. And then let me know for myself whether what I'm being told is true. And then it's not, and then the re-articulating and the educating of somebody else comes from that place. And it's not thin, it's strong, right? It's very deep. And there's a level of confidence that, is really unshakable because you have known it for yourself in a very tangible, visceral, experiential way. So it's interesting too, because Deborah and I were talking yesterday about what will we talk about next time. And showing up for self-care and self-practice is the topic that we're going to be venturing into in our next podcast. And it just makes me think of that, right? Of the value of, from a teacher's perspective, of continuing to show up for your own practice and why we would do that even after we've been through our program teaching for, you know, however much time we've been teaching. So,
yeah, I think that's great. And that was a great point that, yeah, that visceral knowledge, it's not diluted at that point. It's not just a thing you're repeating that someone told me this one time.
Yeah, right.
It's like, I know this in my cells, you know, there's like a cellular level. It's true.
Yeah.
And even if it's, you know, that you can obviously teach to the body in front of you, but you, because you have it in you, you can, I feel like, be a more effective teacher.
Yeah.
To come to wherever they are.
Yeah. Because it's adaptable, right? Because you, it doesn't become broken at any point, no matter what direction you go, because the anchor is still in your own experience. You've validated it. I think that's a word you used earlier. You validated it for yourself. What it makes me also think of, and then we should kind of wrap up, but is that it doesn't always happen like we're describing, right, in a moment or like kind of in an intense experience. But sometimes it happens over a very, very long period of time, over years of teaching, where in the beginning we do have to just take it at face value a little bit, and we are kind of faking it a little, right? We're regurgitating information. It's like, well, I'm teaching it this way because I've been told that this is the most effective way, and I'm taking that on trust, and I'm trusting not only that that's true given the source, but I'm also trusting that at some point in my teaching experience, I will also know it's true, but not yet, right? And not now. So I don't think good quality teaching only happens once you've had the visceral experience, the felt sense and knowing of something. And I just wanted to be really clear about that. I think sometimes we do just, you know, it's not faking it necessarily, but we're just taking it at face value until we have the experience of knowing it for ourselves. And sometimes that takes years and years and years and years and years. It's the physical practice can happen, I think, can be more immediate, which is awesome.
I think that's a great point, though. And that's something that got me through my teacher training program was, I'd done in the past, I had like the barest minimum of acting experience where I tried out for a play and got a part, and I'd never done it before. So it was like this, oh my gosh, I'm going to just act in a play. And it was this really amazing experience. But I started to think of teaching when I would have these these opportunities to teach. And that's sort of where I had to start, knowing that I felt so not confident in my experience as far as teaching Pilates. I was, like, scared, even, that people would ask me to teach Pilates because I had this fear that I would, that everyone would know that I didn't know what I was talking about.
Right.
And I just started to see it as, you know, it's like, well, at one point I was able to take on a character or a role that I had basically just made up. I mean, of course the character was written, but it was like, I got to sort of fill in what that character was. And that was just, it was just something that got me through the first, you know, like probably 2 dozen or 3 dozen times of teaching a class, was sort of talking myself into this role of, like, I'm going to get into character and I'm going to stay in character no matter what, even if I feel like I'm doing a bad job, or I forget the next exercise, or somebody asks a question, or you know, whatever, like, like terrible thing might befall me as a teacher, you know, the things that cause those panic moments, or you feel your, like your confidence is shaken. I was, my strategy for coping and just kind of getting that practice and getting that confidence was to pretend that I was just in a role. Mm-hmm. And it made it easy in some ways to sort of be able to detach in a way, because it can be really, really scary to get up in front of a class and teach, or even just go one-on-one. You know, both circumstances, you're in, again, it's, you're in that vulnerable place, and it's, you know, it's just, it can just be difficult to feel like something you're excited about the first couple times you go in. And so, you know, like you were saying, it's like if you sort of take it at face value and maybe just let it be okay that you're not an expert teacher yet.
Right.
You're not the most, you know, you don't have it in your body yet. Like, that's okay. That's okay to, like, you know, maybe fake it a little bit. You know, embellish your character a little bit. Because in the end, like, most people are not going to know that you don't know, you know, maybe you don't have the rollover down pat yet. Like, so what? it's okay to fake it a little bit until you make it.
Yeah.
Is what I would tell some beginning teachers.
Yeah. Yeah. And I want to let, this has been an amazing conversation, and I want to thank you so much for all your insights. And to that last point that you made, I wanted to just say that there is a TED Talk by a woman named, I think it's Amy Cuddy, like Cuddy.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yes, and she, there's something she says at the end. It's something about body language. But what she says at the end, it's not fake it till you make it. It's fake it to be it, right? Fake it until you are it. And, it's a great TED Talk. If you haven't heard it, or seen it, you should definitely check it out. It's so great. She talks about power poses.
I've seen it and I love it. Yeah. She was definitely, that TED Talk was such an inspiration to me.
Yeah.
As a teacher.
It's awesome. Yeah.
That's so true.
It's like something that every teacher should watch once a week when they start their student teaching, you know, and go into the bathroom and take a power pose for 2 minutes and then go out and teach.
And so, believe it or not, like when I did one of my, my practice practical for the Pilates center, I went into the bathroom stall and stood in that power pose that she recommends.
Oh my
God. I was like, well, it couldn't hurt.
I love it. I love it. It's so fun. I joke about it a lot with my teachers, but I get such a kick out of it because every time I do it, I feel really confident. It's so amazing. Okay. So, if you haven't watched it, everybody who's listening, you should definitely you should end this podcast and go watch it. It's really awesome. And then tell all your friends. Well, Stacey, thank you so much. It's been a really real pleasure to talk with you, and I appreciate all your openness and honesty. And, I'm hoping to plan a trip to the Pilates Center this summer, so hopefully we'll actually get to meet in person.
Oh, great. Chantel, thank you so much. This has been so much fun, and I really enjoyed it, so thank you.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And, yeah, that's it for now, and Deborah and I will be back on the next show. We'll be talking about self-care and self-practice and what does it mean as teachers to show up for your own practice. So if you want to weigh in on that topic, you can email us at thinkingpilatespodcast@gmail.com. All right, that's it for now. Thanks a lot.
All the things that make you sing and tap your little